A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
This program contains dramatizations of real events. Some names and timelines have been changed. Listener discretion is advised.
It was so dark in there. She just held me. She would always say, shh.
She had been held in the garage, nailed into the room, forced to urinate in jugs.
This case stands out as one of the most egregious examples of abuse that I have seen.
They had found a knife. There was blood on the mattress. There was no house near it. Nobody could hear what was going on in that house. For him, it was the perfect place.
Everything that's dark and torturous. He was like a demon.
On April 6, 1999, I was assigned to the Hammond Station as an investigator. This call came in as a domestic violence incident. From where the house was located, it was very rural. It was in a secluded ranch-style area. There was really no immediate neighbors to the house. Everything was locked. Everything. Every window, every door. We'd locked down the scene. And we obtained a search warrant for the house. When we searched the house, we found that every door in the house had been nailed shut. The windows were screwed shut from the inside. We found that the refrigerator was chained closed, as all the cabinets and cupboards were locked. And when we were able to get those open, there were boxes and cans and things like that inside, but they were all empty. We found a bow door that was broken. Where it widens out at the end, the part that you put in the water to actually row with, the sides of that were broken off. And we thought that was kind of odd. Why would there be a bow door inside the house? That's just not normal. And the deputy was on scene, told us that one of the ladies in the garage was alleging that she had been held in the house, in the garage, for about 6 months, nailed into the room, no running water, no access to a restroom, no food. I was overwhelmed. I didn't know exactly where to start. At this point in time, I realized that the domestic violence case that I thought I had was much more serious.
I was born and raised in Cleveland, Ohio. Went to Cleveland Public Schools and went to Cleveland State University. I really didn't want to leave Cleveland, but when I kept looking at the weather every year, it was so gloomy and so snowy. And I just, what piqued my interest was watching the Rose Bowl parade. and I would see sunny California, and everyone looks so happy and so exciting. I said, oh, I would love to go there one day. And sure enough, got my car together, and I grabbed a U-Haul attached to it and headed on out to sunny California. In 1990, I worked at an insurance company in Monrovia, California. And one day after leaving work and on the way home, I drove by a little shopping center.
Love for your family and devotion to your community is key to happiness.
And I saw a young man in the parking lot, and he was talking to a crowd of people.
You will not enter paradise until you believe, and you will not believe until you love one another. Can I inform you of something, brother?
I was curious to see, you know, what he was talking about, and walked over and listened to him.
Give peace and blessings to yourselves. God is merciful and forgiving.
He was from the Nation of Islam. He said his name was Muhammad Shabazz.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I really enjoyed hearing your speech earlier.
Thank you. If you want to learn more, you should come to service tomorrow night.
I might just do that.
It'd be fun. See you.
Well, Muhammad was very, very sweet, and he never pushed anything on me, which I appreciated. And we got kind of acquainted more and more. And eventually, after about a year, he asked me to marry him. And I did. After that, I was pregnant with little Muhammad. He was my firstborn. I was so excited. And in 1995, Miriam was born. They were like 3 years apart. We were very happy. At the time, we had a little bookstore in San Bernardino. Yeah, life in general, it was wonderful. Nice business, wonderful husband, two wonderful kids. You couldn't ask for anything more. So a few months after Miriam was born, in May, I was working at the bookstore, and I heard a commotion outside. And I'm like, what's going on? Well, unbeknownst to me, I would later find out that my husband was selling illegal firearms without the paperwork. When he was finally sentenced, it was 5 years. I was in shock because I didn't know. I had no idea. I had two young children at this point, you know? And I noticed a lot of customers wouldn't patronize anymore, but the bills kept coming in. Then I had received an eviction notice. I had to actually move myself. There was another Muslim who was a good friend of my husband. He seemed concerned. He understood what was happening, and his name was Mansa Musa Muhammad.
Why don't you and the children come and stay with me and my family for a while? I'd love to help.
I don't know what to say.
Musa came up with this plan. He says, well, you know, we're moving too. Why don't we all just move together until your husband gets out of prison? And then that way you're not alone. You can move in with my wife and kids and stay as long as you want.
Muhammad and I are very close friends. It'd be my honor.
Thank you.
Assalamu alaikum.
I did want to run it by my husband to make sure everything is okay. And he said, well, you know, I'm going to see him this evening, because he did visit him. And he says, I'll talk to him about it. So I moved in with them, me, my son Ahmed, and my daughter Miriam. He introduced me to his wife and his older daughter. He went on down the line to, he named each and every one. And they greeted me back. They were lined up like they had just maybe finished with prayer.
Hi. My name is Laura. What's your name?
Mira.
Pretty. You have any friends in the neighborhood?
We have God and each other.
And I said, wow, your mother doesn't have visitors? No. You guys don't have friends and family members to come? No.
Why don't I finish showing you around?
It was as though they were in a different world.
Inside! Time for prayer. Let's go.
We had no toys. I remember that. That's not really like a word that was in my vocabulary. You know, it would just be going to the mosque, saying prayers. It's not like normal families where the kids get to go outside and have fun and go to schools and, you know, go on trips or go out to dinner or these type of things. Why are we here? That was my biggest question all the time. Why are we here? Because I didn't understand. I was so young to know that my father was in jail. And the life that we had before, like, just didn't exist to me.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Musa was really strict as far as their discipline, and he pretty much told you how to eat, when to eat, what to eat, how to dress, when to wake up, when to go to bed, when to say prayer, when to do everything. This was definitely not the way Islam was, and not the way Muhammad taught me and the things that I read in the Quran. I didn't want to come in questioning, you know. You're almost walking on eggshells and tippy-toe yourself because you're not a family member. You're just staying temporarily for a little while. And I just didn't want to start any trouble. So I kept my mouth shut on a lot of issues.
Laura, where are you going?
I'm taking Muhammad to see his father. It's family visitation day.
I don't think that's a good idea.
He started saying things like,
Well, you know, it's not good for you to bring the kids down to, you know, a prison to see them. It's a bad environment for the kids, maybe traumatizing them, and you shouldn't go there. If you need me to relay anything to them, you maybe write it down in a letter and give it to me, and I'll give it to them. And I kind of ponder that a little bit, and I go, well, okay, well, I'll put in a letter and I'll ask, you know, Muhammad, is that okay? Well, he would come back and he would tell me, well, Muhammad said that you need to hang in here with us a little longer. We're safe to be with, and he doesn't want you alone by yourself, and you and the kids, and something can happen, and family's not around, and we're like your family now, and just, you know, things that go by quickly, and he'll be home soon, and you should trust your husband on this, and just listen to him. And I go, okay, you know, and I had mixed emotions. Oh, gosh, if I only knew. But boy, back in that little brain, that little voice in the back of your head was just saying, no, this isn't right. I noticed a lot of red flags. There wasn't enough food in the home, and I couldn't understand why. He didn't work. From my understanding, he was receiving money from the military, like a pension. And then his wife was receiving assistance for like food stamps and money for the kids. Food was being bought, but if food wasn't distributed to the children. He would say, well, fasting's good for them. Some days they don't need to eat at all. Some days they can eat after the sunset, and it keeps them strong. But he was eating fine. He had the food locked in his room, in the closet, big bags of rice and things like that.
I do remember, like, starving. I got memories of me eating, like, scrap bread.
The children said that my son, Muhammad, stole some bread off the table and was eating it. And he wanted to discipline him like the rest. Well, he used this paddle. It looked like a boat oar, but it was broken in half.
Hands.
And he hit him one time on the back of his hand. It was so hard, I told him, no, that's not happening. I just pushed the paddle away, and then that's when he hit me. He backhanded me with his right fist.
In this house, I discipline whomever I please.
The only memories I have in that situation, honestly, is everything that was dark and torturous. I mean, I can't even remember his face in that time. I feel like it was just like a demon. It all seems like a nightmare, like a dream. Like in a dream where you can't, like, it's hard for you to throw a punch or it's hard for you to say words in the dream. Like, that's how it felt. Like, I don't remember even crying or like having emotions.
I think being so young, it was more frightening for me to see someone angry, realizing there was no method to his madness. There was no strict real rule to anything. I think he just went off any negative emotion that wasn't his. Once things, you know, really took a turn for the worse, I was like, who is this man? Who are we with?
It was going into a mood of a cult feeling, you know? It was just, you just have one person in charge running everyone's life, and everyone's listening to that one individual without any outside, you know, involvement at all. I wanted to talk to somebody about it, but who do you talk to at this point? How do you even get out of the situation to go and talk to anyone?
I think that Laura suffered from fear of leaving. She had nowhere to go. And almost everywhere where the family lived was rural areas where there was nowhere to run to. So she really never had a chance to get away from him for any period of time, to give herself a chance to leave, to take her children and run.
You're not going anywhere.
These are people that had, you know, no access to their own money. They had no access to food unless they were told they could eat. They had no access to transportation. Where were they going to go, you know, even if they could get out?
I remember one time I really almost in a way had to trick them into talking to my sister, you know. Well, it's her birthday, and I wanted to say happy birthday, and it wasn't her birthday. But I just wanted to hear her voice and talk to her, and he finally broke down and go, okay, but I have to be on the other end of the phone to make sure, you know, you're okay.
Laura, I haven't heard from you in over 6 months. How are you?
I'm good.
You should come home. See Mom and Dad, we miss you.
I miss them too.
Are you okay?
I'm good. I'm good.
Just wanted to talk to her alone and tell her what was happening. I mean, this is my feelings, you know, but just could never get the chance to do that. One particular night he came into the room. And the next thing I knew, he was pushing me down, and it happened so fast, he was on top of me. And he actually raped me. He actually raped me right there in that bed with my children still in the room. When he got off top of me, he goes, "We consummated now. You can't leave. You are my wife, and you can't leave."
Don't wake your children.
And I laid there in total shock. I did not know what to think, what to do. What does that mean? What did I get myself into? And how do I get myself out of it? It was scary. Was truly scary. I didn't know what to do. I was trapped. One day, Musa went to a bookstore in L.A. He saw a young lady came in the store, and they knew each other. Her name was Adrian, but they called her Quima. She was having some family issues and things of her own, trying to live places to stay with her and her kids. And he hit her with, you know, "You need to just stay with us for a while." You know, it's like he was reeling her in, like he had reeled me in. And he did. He moved her in and her two children.
These three women and these multiple children, they were just their own family unit, and that's all they ever dealt with. They didn't go anywhere without Musa. They didn't go anywhere on their own. It was always under his direct supervision. So there was never a way for them to leave.
It was later on that said, "I'm not feeling well." And I explained to him, you know, how I was feeling, nauseated. And I took a pregnancy test. And I'm sitting there like, I can't be. You know, I'm married. How am I tell my husband this? One day, I saw a picture of one of the kids in the living room area, and I took it and I wrote on the back of it, "Help." And we were in the backyard, and I kind of balled up the picture and I tossed it over in the yard of the neighbor next door to us. I was just maybe hoping someone would see that, maybe bring attention, you know, maybe some people could come over, something. And days would go by, nothing would ever happen. But finally, there was a knock at the door, and it was from the Department of Social Services.
We were in the middle of prayer.
Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt. This won't take long.
She wanted to see the children. She wanted to talk to him and his wife about the homeschooling situation.
This is what we use for math lessons.
An excellent book. I know that one.
I thought maybe the kids would say something. I should have known better, too, because she talked to each and every one of them, but none of them did. They were scared.
You look a little thin. Do you get enough to eat?
I'm sure that Musa, he was a very intelligent man. He was more than willing or more than able to give them a story that they were able to believe, and they left, not knowing anything about the actual abuse that was going on in the home.
Again, apologies for the interruption.
No problem. Thank you for coming.
Absolutely. Have a great day.
So that was it. So I felt once again alone and isolated.
It was not a wanted pregnancy. But
Tess Lima was born in a hospital there.
When she was born, I loved her.
I was happy and strangely sad at the same time, you know. And I really thought while I was in this hospital that I could talk to somebody there, you know, maybe a nurse, a social worker, someone there, but just could never get the chance to do that. He saw that the household was getting larger and decided to move.
And we moved out into Owanga.
From where the house was located, it was very rural. If you needed to go for gas or groceries or any necessities, it would take you 40 minutes, 45 maybe, to get there. So it was very secluded. For him, I think it was the perfect place. There was no house near it. Nobody could hear what was going on inside that house. There was nobody that was going to come check up on him. It was a great place to do what he was doing.
There's your water. There's your bed. Get comfortable. I'm going to be here for a while.
He put us in the garage and locked everything up and wouldn't let us leave. Muhammad and Miriam stay in the garage with me as well. But he took Taslima away from me. I didn't get a chance to have her at all. We didn't have a bed. It was actually a mattress on the floor. There was nowhere to eat. We couldn't use the bathroom. We had to use these little buckets that was in the garage and later on take them outside.
It was so dark in there. She just held me. And I remember she would always say, shh. She would, every time, she would just hold me and just say, shh. Because he could hear everything.
Whatever I was going through at that time, something was like installed inside of me, like kind of like consumed my life.
We're a prisoner in this home. How are we going to get escape out of here? How? Because somebody's going to die in this house.
There was, it's a memory I have. Of us sitting on this filthy mattress in the garage. I mean, filthy. And I remember I threw up and my mom threw up and she swallowed it. And I remember her saying, I don't know the next time he's going to open that door. Because that's when the only time he would open that door is when he would throw some food out.
We had pretty much reached that boiling point. So just to try to seek medical attention, try to get out the house, I try to even harm myself. And I try to scratch my wrists over and over and over and over, you know, to make it bleed. He still refused to take me to see a doctor. That's when I had to kick in and try to figure out some ways. Someone's got to do something. I started scrounging around in the boxes, looking for something to write down. You know, in case something happened to one of us, somebody, authorities, or someone to find it. Well, I found an old legal pad and an ink pen and a broken pencil. And I started writing. The one page turned into 13 pages. And I wrote front and back. And just outlining everything that happened to us that I could think of. It was doom and gloom in that house. And I told them, one of us is going to die. And I need to have some proof or something that happened to us in this house. He would actually search the room for different things, for a reason. I guess he was in a paranoid state. If he had read those letters, I feel like he would have killed us. I would stick it down in my underwear and sleep with it. I was just pretty much having evidence on me, but I couldn't take it anywhere. I remember the postal woman put a note on the door, you know, that you have a package. And it was for me.
What is this? What is this?
I don't know. Maybe it's the food stamps I applied for. I probably need to sign for them.
I remember applying for food stamps. He made me and all the other women there in that house do that.
You're coming with me into town.
Mommy!
Let's go.
Muhammad looked so sad. Just the look on his face. It was like, Mommy, am I ever going to see you again? And I just wanted to tell him, you know, everything's going to be okay. I'm going to try to get us help. I'm going to try to get help. I don't know how, but I'm going to try to get us help. We got into town. We went inside the post office. There was a couple of people ahead of me.
Excuse me, brother. Are you from the nation?
Yes.
So it was a guy that came out of nowhere, and he struck up a conversation with Musa. They just started talking, and it was just like, wow, great timing, you know? Distraction.
Next.
I say, I'm here to pick up a package. But I kept looking over my shoulder, and I noticed she looked at me, and she looked over my shoulder, you know? But she felt like something was wrong. She could feel it. She felt me. And I was praying. I said, this is my only hope. It's either now or never. But I had a long dress on, a long black slip. And I raised it up, and she was staring at me. And I could almost see her eyes getting a little larger. But she didn't give me away. She didn't say anything. She didn't say, what are you doing? Or nothing that would have brought attention. And I reached inside, and I pulled the letter out that was folded. Put it on the counter. She took the letter from me.
Oh! Excuse me, where do you go to worship around?
Right after she did that, he yelled my name out.
What are you doing?
Sign up the package.
We don't have all day. Let's go. Let's go.
As we got to the door, I looked back at her, you know. We couldn't talk. I didn't know what to say to her. All she did was she nodded. And I was scared to death because I didn't know what she would do. Would she read it? Would it sit there? Would it get lost? You know, all that effort I put into writing all of that, would it just be gone? We were in a garage, and I could hear a car pull up. And the next thing I know, it was banging on the door.
I just remember being in the garage and hearing people and feeling my heart racing. And I was panicking, and my mother was just rocking us. And I remember the door getting opened. And it was just so much light all at once. Like, you know how they say when you're about to pass and you see that bright light. That's what it felt like, just a big bright light.
I see an officer standing there with a look like it was my letter. And he said to me, "Are you Laura Cowan?" And I go, "Yes." He said, "Did you write this letter?" And I go, "Yes, I wrote the letter." And the next thing I know, that place had so many officers there. When I saw Musa going toward a police car and he was in handcuffs, I just said, "This nightmare is over. This nightmare is over and we're free." We were finally, finally free. And I said, "Oh God, we made it out alive." I got to talk to my husband. He was released from jail and in the halfway house. And then that's when I come to learn that when Musa never communicated with him, he didn't send him any of the letters I gave him to give to him. He didn't go up to the jail to visit him and talk to him. He came back and told me he did each time. And the words that he was saying was from him, from Musa himself. There was nothing, no instructions coming from Muhammad whatsoever. Muhammad did not know where we were. Me and the children were able to come down and see him. And oh my gosh, that was a great reunion. It really was. Muhammad was so excited. And Miriam was so happy to see him. Jeez.
Meeting my dad for the first time. Those are the memories I hold dear to me. I just remember, like, him playing with me. My dad would just, like, was a big jokester. And I think he just wanted to create that bond, you know.
We were talking about finding our own place again. He even accepted Taslima, you know, and that was hard for him. And I know it was. And I thought for once now we're going to be a family together. I was so happy. And then a month later, he passed away. He died of a heart attack. It was so hard. So hard. But I knew at that point I didn't want to continue living there in California any longer. Took the kids and we moved back to Cleveland.
I think he honestly thought he was going to get away with this. I think he thought that the children were going to continue to lie for him. I think he thought that he was going to beat this case somehow, that maybe his presence would scare them enough to not talk, but eventually that didn't work for him.
This case stands out in my mind as one of the most egregious examples of abuse that I have seen, not just in terms of the abuse inflicted, but the number of people impacted.
We were in therapy, to be honest with you, 6 to 7 years, a long time, long time. But I had to do it because I'll tell you, it would have been a basket case. Yeah. And it helped. It helped tremendously because I saw my son, he flourished. You know, in high school, he was able to get out that shell, you know, because for a long time, he wouldn't talk to anyone. He wouldn't have friends. He didn't trust. Mm-mm. No, The therapy helped tremendously, and he started joining a football team, and he just got out there. Yeah. Same with Miriam.
I feel like I have a lot of things built up from the way I got treated by the world and experiences. I don't know how I came out of that. That's crazy.
I will say it's a part of who I am now. I'm 27 now. I'm still healing. And it's okay.
I joined and volunteered at the Domestic Violence Center. Started helping women there, talking to them in groups. I started working at Housing Authority. I became their domestic violence advocate. We have over 65,000 residents, and I'm able to help them. I continue to fight and let people know that they're not alone. If I've got through it, they can get through it too.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.